When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The part that gets me is, you know, in the last season where like everyone levitates and then cracks a whole bunch.
Yeah.
They do that on stage and it's convincing.
Oh,
yeah.
We're going to suspend you above the stage and then flop around like a fish.
Yeah, it was incredible. I loved it. I super recommend it. Guys, get your butts over here so you can watch it together.
I mean, I'm just going to wait for them to film it and put it on Netflix because that seems like the next step.
Oh, they almost have to. I mean, the effects, I think, are going to hold up.
Okay. Very cool. I did a weird thing this week. Have you guys ever heard of AMC Screen Unseen?
No.
So every Monday, almost, I think every Monday, maybe not every Monday, but AMC does this thing called Screen Unseen, where they will tell you the rating of a movie, the length of a movie, and all you know about it is it's not out in theaters yet. I had this Monday off, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to this because it sounds interesting. For $5, I'll go see a movie without knowing what it is until it starts playing.
Can you tell me what you knew about it and we can guess?
I can tell you what I knew about it, and I knew the film was PG-13.
Okay.
I knew it was 2 hours long.
Okay.
And that was it. That was it. And it wasn't out yet. And looking at the list of other things that they've done this year, it's usually about a week or two early from its release.
Okay. I got it. I know my guess.
Okay. What's your guess, Devin?
Oh, I didn't know if we were going to do both. It's Godzilla and Kong. That's what you saw.
No.
Oh, I was so sure about that.
Ryan, do you want to take a stab at it?
No.
Okay.
I have no idea. And that's why I was just like down here.
So do you guys remember how I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife early at New York Comic Con?
Did you see Ghostbusters?
No, I wish it was Ghostbusters. It was Arthur the King with Mark Wahlberg and a dog.
No.
I went into this looking at what's coming out and I was like, I hope it's Ghostbusters. Maybe it's this David Alan Grier movie, Association of Magical Negroes. Like, I was like, I'd see that.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's the Mark Wahlberg dog movie. Oh. And I almost walked out. As soon as Mark Wahlberg's name came on the screen, I almost walked out. Because I was like, I don't need to see a dog movie. I'm not the audience for dog movies. But let me tell you a bit about this movie, guys.
Okay.
It's based on a true story. Mm-hmm. It's about a group of adventure racers where you race 200 miles hiking, biking, mountain climbing through the jungle. Mark Wahlberg's the leader. And on this race, they run into a dog at one of the stops, like one of the rest points. Mark Wahlberg feeds the dog a meatball, and then like 100 miles later during the race, they find the dog finds them again. It's like the dog is just following them the whole race. It's really cheesy. Like, I was watching this and I was like, I know exactly what's about to happen in this scene. Like, Mark Wahlberg is trying to put this team together and he needs sponsors. So he's meeting with his company to try to get them to sponsor him. And his agent's like, give us a second. And Mark Wahlberg gets up to leave. I was like, he's not going to walk out that door. He's going to turn around and give him his business. And that's exactly what he did on cue. It was very predictable, but at the end of it, I was like, you know what? I don't hate this.
Are you
going to
make us watch it?
No, I'm never watching this again. But I was like, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. If you like dog movies, it's decent. Simu Liu.
Hold on.
Yeah, okay.
There are two types of dog movies, and this is important to me, Alan.
Yes.
There's Homeward Bound and there's Old Yeller. Where are we on this spectrum here?
There's Homeward Bound and there's Joe Dirt. This is more Homeward Bound.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. But you get a little bit of Old Yeller in there too. So,
oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
The movie, it's a true story, so the dog doesn't die.
Okay.
Spoilers for Arthur the King.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm glad you liked it though. I'm also glad you didn't walk out, because I almost would have for this.
Yeah, I probably would have if I was in a decent seat that I had access to the aisle. Now that I have easy access to AMC theaters, and once my Mondays are free over the summer, I'm probably going to go to this more often. So stay tuned.
Cool.
Stay tuned for more AMC Unseen reviews here on the show.
I can't wait for you to see more movies when they come, or before they come out. It's going to be cool.
Yeah. I'm here for that. So
hold on. How much Bear Grylls was in this movie?
He narrates the whole thing.
No, he doesn't.
He does. He's the narrator.
Ew.
Is he a
good narrator?
It's weird because he does the commentary for like the race stuff. Mm-hmm. Like he's doing it for somebody else, but he's just doing it for the audience. Like, it's very bizarre.
Oh, weird.
It's a weird choice.
Bear Grylls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just catching up to that. As soon as I would have heard his voice, I would have walked out.
Yeah. He's listed fourth in the cast list.
I don't care whose legs I would have to get to, like, move. I'm like, get me out of here.
Here's the thing, though. Like, the guy sitting next to me, like, I wouldn't have a problem asking him to let me out. The guy had a laptop when I walked into the theater. Like, he was just on his laptop doing work, waiting for the movie to start. When the movie started, he put it away. I'm like,
oh, good.
What? What is this? I've We're never seen.
How busy is your day? You got to do that.
I don't know, but I was like, is he writing a review? Like, if that's the case, then sit in the back row. Like, don't sit in front of people in the middle.
Pen and paper that.
Yeah, pen and paper.
Better than a typewriter. I've seen videos of people doing that. I've seen videos.
Oh, that's...
yeah.
They're just taking the piss.
But I will be seeing Ghostbusters in a few weeks, so.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah. All right. Ryan, you didn't watch anything, but you had something you wanted to talk about, right?
Yes. So, I've stated before on the show that, like, I'm a big Dragon Ball Z fan. I have everything that's been done from Akira Toriyama, the guy who created the whole thing. I have everything that he's been involved with on, like, on physical media. He passed away on March 1st, unexpectedly, from a hematoma. I'm not pronouncing that correctly. A cerebral hematoma. It was really unexpected, and this hit me harder than I really thought it would. This show, when Dragon Ball Z came to the States, it was on Cartoon Network on Toonami. And I think like 95 or 94. So I was going from like fifth grade to sixth grade and then onward. And people always talk about like that one show that they like couldn't, like towards the end of the day, it was the one thing they could think, like it was the only thing they could think about going home from school. This was my show. I made friendships over this show where like that was the connecting tissue for like early friendships for me when I was younger. The response around the world has been overwhelming. A bunch of people showed up, I believe, in Colombia, in Rio. I could be wrong on the town, or I could be wrong on where this happened, but like 20,000 people showed up to like put their arms up for the spirit bomb in his honor. And like he's... When you talk about Goku and Dragon Ball Z, it's in the same category as like Warner Brothers cartoons. Like that's how big this one story is. And it's amazing to me how a storyteller in a different country where it would have to cross culture, cross language, can affect someone. even going through all of those barriers. And like when I got the news, like I woke up to it on the 2nd, on March 2nd, and it completely ruined my day. Like it was one of those things where it was like, I never thought that hearing about the news that the creator of Dragon Ball Z would almost ruin me. Mm-hmm. and this practically did. But I have started a complete rewatch. I'm doing one episode a day, which it's going to take me like 2 years to watch everything. And I'm doing it all on the media that I have, because I could go through Crunchyroll, that site. But if I do that, I would be paying $10 a month just to watch one show, and I'm not doing that, even though I'm watching it like once a day. But yeah, so this is going to be my routine until I'm all the way through Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball GT, Dragon Ball Super, and then all of the related non-canon movies that he was a part of making as well. So, I've got literally, 2 years worth of stuff to watch.
Dragon Ball Evolution?
No. We don't speak of that.
There is no Warren Boss in
speak of that.
Did you not see, though, that the main actor, the guy that played Goku from that movie, apologized and, like...
Oh, yeah. No.
Recently did,
because of
this.
Yeah, he recently apologized. The problem... And this is something that, I just want to pay my respects to the family,
mm-hmm,
and to the fans as well, because I'm in that group. And just that this was a devastating loss for everyone involved. Now, to move on from that topic, something that Alan's brought up about when studios get involved because they just see a potential cash cow. Things get ruined. That's what happened with Dragon Ball Evolution. I literally watched the first 10 minutes of that movie and turned it off, because it was basically they basically took all the characters' names, took a rough idea of what they looked like, and then just made up their own thing.
Wow.
Completely destroyed where the characters came from, completely destroyed when they come into the timeline. I understand that you want to do your own thing and kind of tell your own story, but when you diverge that far from the original narrative...
Too far.
Let alone just the horrible quality that the movie was filmed in. And I would not be surprised with when Evolution came out as to why Akira Toriyama got back into the Dragon Ball universe that he had created and came out with Dragon Ball Super. I would not be surprised, because it just with Godzilla, Toho was going to scrap. Toho was pretty much done with Godzilla after the late 90s run of movies. And then they sold the rights to an American studio to make Godzilla, and Godzilla 98 or
98. Yeah.
The 98 Godzilla came out, and Toho's like, oh no, we got to do Damage Control. And then out with a new, just came out with Godzilla 2000, which is going to be my movie pick for the thing that I want.
Oh, incredible.
With Alan. I'm just going to tell you that now. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Wait, which one? I'm which one?
Mad. Godzilla 2000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I mean, I think it'll be a pick. I've never seen it, so.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing. All right. Well, I'm sorry that this loss has affected you, but it sounds like you're paying a great tribute to him. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying. It's one of those things where I wanted to bring it up just because it's one of those things where I told my wife the other day, I tend to try to not... I try not to look up to too many people, just because he wanted to tell a story, he was talented, and everyone loved it, and he was a very private person, and he didn't care about the fame of it. In fact, he was surprised that anyone still cared about it. And so I tried to treat it like that. He created it, he wants to be left alone, leave him alone. That's what it is. And then this happens, and it's he didn't know he had no idea how important his work was to me. And I didn't know how important his work was to me until this happened.
And it's a shame it takes something like that to get you to realize how important it is to you. Not while they're around.
And that's the part that sucks a little bit, or else I would have done one or two more fanish type things. Maybe when I was younger, you know, asked for an autograph or something, you know, like in the mail or something like that when I was younger. But like I said, like I wanted, like he wanted to be left alone. So of course I'll leave him alone. But yeah.
Yeah. I've got a little bit of the same regret when it comes to like the Green Ranger. So.
Oh yeah.
Jason David Frank. I met the Red Ranger, but boy, do I regret that.
Really?
Oh yeah. He, we'll fill you in on that whole thing after the show.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Okay. He's you know, it's bad when you have another Power Ranger come out and say, you know what? Some people just need a publicist.
Love that.
So, yeah. All right. Well, let's get into today's main topic. Devin's Oscar bet pick for this week, where he could pick any movie, regardless of who, if we've all seen it or not. And his pick was the David Spade comedy Joe Dirt. Devin, take it away from me,
aren't
please.
Aren't you glad I didn't win this again?
So glad.
So my pick was, as Alan said, the 2001 hit comedy Joe Dirt, directed by Johnny Gordon, written by David Spade and Fred Wolf, starring David Spade, Bethany Daniel, Dennis Miller, and a whole bunch of people that I'm honestly surprised to see cameos of, and I hope you guys were too. Before I get into much of this, to be fair, tell me about your history with this movie. I told you mine a little bit last week, but let me hear your guys's.
Remind us quick, what was your history with this?
Yeah.
So this is my most watched movie in my entire life. There was a point in time where I had been going back and forth between my mom's house and my dad's house, and my mom hadn't set up cable, only had a DVD player, and only had one DVD, and that DVD was Joe Dirt. So there are times in my life when I've watched this movie 2 to 3 times in the same day, because it's the only thing that we had to watch, because there was no cable and no other DVD. And
This explains one of my notes.
It was seriously. There was like a 2 or 3 week period where like there was no other choice but to watch Joe Dirt or nothing. So we chose Joe Dirt, and then we got cable and got more DVDs and went, you guys just want to watch Joe Dirt again? And like it just like became like our family thing where we just like watch Joe Dirt again, and like we had like our own little jokes like Life's a Garden, dig it, and like you know, all of those like other like oh like. You know, I got two microphones right here. Like those like little jokes, like we just like kept telling each other, and it became this like weird like cultural phenomenon in my family for like a while because it was the only thing that we had to watch. So like I've probably seen this movie like 100 times, not exaggerating.
Wow.
So that's my history with the movie. I didn't think I'd ever get to talk about it on this show. And it's always one of those movies that in the back of my mind, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to come back to Joe Dirt, and it's going to be terrible.
What's your history with Joe Dirt?
I had no history with Joe Dirt. So I attempted to watch this at some point back in high school, and turned it off at the double mic moment.
You did not get far.
Do you want to know why I turned it off at the double mic moment? Because Chris Farley wasn't in it with him.
Oh, that's fair. You do miss him in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His brother's Alan, in it, though. And I when his brother shows up on screen, I was like, he looks so much like his brother.
Yeah, yeah. That's totally fair.
My history with this is I have seen this before. Not as much as you. And not as much as I want to admit on the internet. but there were moments in this that as I was watching it came back to me. And I was like, oh my God, I know what happens next. And I still found myself laughing. And Devin,
good.
I hate you for that.
I'm not mad at all.
This is one of those movies that when it was on, and there was nothing else on, I'd be like, okay, Joe Dirt, whatever. I put it on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Okay, I mean that's a pretty fair like history to have with Joe Dirt. So, all right, my biggest worry for this movie for years was, does it hold up well? So I'm gonna ask you guys before I answer it for me. Guys, does this hold up well?
80% of it.
Yeah, 80% of it holds up well for you.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, in what sense? Right. Because there are things in here that don't age well.
Was it still an enjoyable movie for you to watch, knowing that there are jokes and gags and bits that are that just didn't age well because comedies don't age well?
Yeah, I think it still works because it made me laugh. If a comedy can make me laugh once, then I think it's a success. Because okay. comedy is subjective, and if it makes you get if it gets to you once, it's done its job.
Yeah, that's so. Fair. For me, on this like my 101st rewatch of it, I am now a much older person and took a lot different of tack of what this was. Because like kind of growing up, I think I realized something kind of not great about me, and I think some of the humor that I found so funny in the original one was humor at Joe Dirt's expense, because it was like, ah, look at this redneck. It's funny to laugh at rednecks because all of my family are rednecks. And like, yeah. I think it was more of like that cathartic kind of humor that I took away from it originally when I watched it. But this time, like, he's really sympathetic. I really like him as a character. And like, I laugh for different reasons than I did last time and at different jokes that I know that like 11-year-old Devin did not understand.
This movie, watching it as an adult, reminds me a lot of Forrest Gump.
I was going to say this movie is Forrest Gump for Gen X.
So I watched, I was going to talk about this at the very end, but the movie's aware that it is Forrest Gump because in the sequel, he literally is sitting on a bench talking to somebody about his life as the framing device for the movie. He helps form the band Leonard Skinner because he runs into them. Like, the second one just turns into Forrest Gump. Like, the movie understands what's happening.
Okay, so did 11-year-old Devin know that about 30% of this movie was just jokes and reframing from other movies?
The only other thing that I caught was that it puts the lotion on the skin was probably from Silence of the Lambs, and that's it.
That was my introduction to Buffalo Bill.
Me too!
Like, I saw this before Ryan made me watch Silence of the Lambs on the show. Yeah. Yeah, so when Buffalo Bill came on in Silence of the Lambs, like, oh, it's like that scene in Joe Dirt.
Well, and I don't think I remembered this scene from Joe Dirt when we did the Silence of the Lambs podcast. I think, like, when you asked me, when have you seen parts of this movie, I think I went, oh, The Simpsons, and completely forgot that they reference it in Joe Dirt.
Yeah, pretty heavily, I might say. Like, this has got to be the most, like, in-your-face reference I've ever seen of that scene. Or from a character. But yeah, that's fun stuff. Okay.
Well, I'm happy that it at least kind of held up for you guys. So I want to know then, was there any celebrity or actor that you were really surprised or delighted to see in this? Because I had that this time, like, knowing, like, who people are. I loved the fact that Kid Rock was in it. Because he fits so well with this. I was like, ah, Kid Rock.
Here's my notes on that.
Uh-huh.
Literally as soon as he popped up on the screen, I wrote, WTF, is that Kid Rock? And then dot, dot, dot. And then, like, 30 seconds later, oh, God, it is Kid Rock. And that's not good. That's not a good note. Like, I'm just telling you right now. Like,
he has,
like,
my favorite line in this movie, though. Why don't you go to McDonald's and get some Whamburger with some French fries?
See, my problem was that I probably heard that insult from someone in high school at some point and didn't even catch it.
Didn't clock it.
No. Not that I didn't clock it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that because the words are so close together that, like, they're so close to the actual words that with the way that my brain processes information, because to be perfectly honest, if it wasn't for the subtitles being on when I was watching it, I wouldn't have caught that.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So it's funny that you bring up Chris Rock, or Kid Rock, not Chris Rock. It's a whole different rock.
All other person.
Although this movie would be a lot more interesting if Chris Rock was playing that character. I saw a meme yesterday that I shared with my wife, and I'm gonna show you. I'm gonna do what I did to her with you guys on the show here. I'm gonna show you the meme format. So it's Margot Robbie looking terrified, and then screaming in the second shot.
Yeah.
The text in the first bubble is "Werewolves of London" by Warren Zevon. No, all summer long, Chris Rock.
They do with the same riff.
Yeah, Kid Rock is in this. That's all I got.
He's certainly in this.
He's certainly in it. For me, you know, the one celebrity that I always like to see.
I was so hoping that was it.
Christopher Walken.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
My favorite scene is him like pushing the like giant like push broom down the hallway and stopping and having a whole conversation to the fire extinguisher box in the hallway.
You're talking to my guy all wrong. You're looking at him all wrong.
He's in his own world. He's doing what he needs to survive doing that job and just letting his brain just run so he can physically do this mundane job every day. It was great.
You know, for me, it's a little bit Taxi Driver. Like
it was.
Yeah. And I think this was my introduction to Christopher Walken, knowing who Christopher Walken was. Because I think I had seen Batman Returns before this, but I had no recollection of who Christopher Walken was. But at a certain point, Christopher Walken started being in things in the early 2000s. Like, oh, the guy from Joe Dirt. Mm-hmm. Like, rewatching this made me realize a lot about myself, and I'm not okay with that, Devin.
Yeah.
So
my character person for this, mine, mm-hmm. and... when you just have to know that in my notes after their name is the green sick emoji face, not the one that's throwing up, but just the one that's about to, like that.
Yeah.
Dennis Miller.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So my history with Dennis Miller goes back to the 90s when I would watch movies with my dad when I was way too young to watch them. Like, you know, like movies that were on it that started at like 8:30 at night on HBO.
Yeah.
Like not the real bad stuff, but like Terminator, like you know, like Terminator, Terminator 2, you know, like those type of things, Aliens.
Yeah, it's like the time.
And then Dennis Miller Live would come on at like 10:30 at night, and my dad would just let me watch Dennis Miller Live, which is basically a precursor to what's that guy that I purposely forgot his name that does the HBO show now?
Bill Maher.
Oh, so Bill Maher. Okay.
So like Dennis Miller was kind of like the precursor to that. It was basically the same concept. Then he would come out, he would tell a joke, he would give his view on current topics. Then he would have like an interview with one person or a few people and crack some jokes and then they'd move on. Mm-hmm. And I loved his show simply because Tears for Fears, their one song in, you know, it's like Everyone Wants to Rule the World was the intro song to his show. And it was just a bunch of like dominoes would fall with all of the like CNN news clips of what was going on like that month. And then it was like all the dominoes falling along with that song playing. And I always thought that was so cool as a kid.
So edgy.
Yeah. And then he tried to do Monday Night Football color commentary, and that didn't really work out in like the early millennium, the late 90s. But the fact that Dennis Miller was in this was just a huge shock for me, because I haven't even given a thought about this guy in like 20 years.
Yeah, he's kind of gone off the radar. Like, he's not, he doesn't act
he
much.
Went off the rails, then he went off the radar.
Yeah. I think he still does like a radio show or something. I feel like he's still around.
Same thing with Carson Daly. Was another big surprise. Like, that brought me back to my middle school in because like 2001, 2002 was like peak TRL time.
Yeah,
I was like a sophomore, junior in high school, and that was me driving home in my car or riding the bus to get home to watch TRL.
Yeah.
Like every single day.
What got me about that scene was looking in the background and seeing the NSYNC No Strings Attached billboard in Times Square.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the TRL that I remember. Like that's the moment that set was the big deal.
It was, it really like placed it in a a really interesting time period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I need to know, were there any parts of the movie that didn't, from a comedy standpoint, didn't hold up for you guys? That like any jokes that fell flat or jokes that you're like, okay, I get that that was a joke of that time that's not funny anymore.
The whole fireworks salesman thing.
The whole fireworks salesman thing? Like
the whole concept around that.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Now that still works for me because that's kind of that's become a meme at this point. Because I see that every year around the 4th of July, you see people talking about
snakes and sparklers.
Snakes and sparklers and him listing off a bunch of stuff. And
it's not – okay, so when I say the fireworks scene, it has nothing to do with fireworks. It has everything with the intention of why Joe Dirt is there to talk to the guy in the first place.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like why he goes to Kicking Wing.
Goes to Kicking Wing to begin with. That's what I'm talking about. The whole fireworks thing is funny. Like that whole thing and like the septic tank that looks like an A-bomb. Funny. The reason why he's there.
that doesn't hold up for me.
Yeah, that part's not super great.
For me, like, I don't understand why the dog had to die.
No, I don't.
Because I was oh, he like shoots, like he like jumps in front of it and gets a bullet in the butt. Like, I literally thought it was going to be Forrest Gump there for a second and he was going to like get shot in the ass. But yeah, I didn't remember the dog dying, which was like, oh, that's a choice.
Well,
okay.
And I feel like they changed things up a little bit because the editing for one thing on the dog was so bad. I actually wrote a note on it.
Was it when he got his ball stuck to the porch?
No, it has nothing.
That was
it has nothing to do with that. No. The editing was bad. So this is my moment of when Alan went off about the editing of that one scene in the Freddie Mercury movie. This is my moment to do that. So like dog runs away to get the grand to get the hunter help because his foot's trapped in the rail yard, like in the tracks. Dog runs away. Cut. He's running by the crap in the front yard of the house. Like, they show the dog, like, a second and a half, a two-second shot of the dog running up to, like, the motor that's in the front yard and the car seats that Joe Dirt was sitting on. Like, it's literally the front yard of the house. Cut. Now the dog is running past a bush in a suburban neighborhood and makes love to a random dog. Cut. Goes back to the scene of where it was running through the crap in the front yard up to them on the steps.
They needed to both have the dog at the end as the happy ending, and they needed to show, or they needed him to walk around with the dog's ashes and talk to him, and specifically have an urn that's held together with a skull sticker.
But here's the thing, you could still have all of that. And in this movie, you did not need to know that the dog stopped for a little hanky during that run. This movie is not that quality where you need to know. It could just be a surprise at the end where she goes, it looks like he had a little sex encounter when he was younger.
I don't know. I think that's kind of funny timing, though, is he's like on the way to go rescue it. Smash cut to the dog doing that.
They put that there for one comedic effect, and it's Chekhov's gun. If you're gonna show something, it's gotta play into it later.
Chekhov's gun, in this movie, this is not needed.
But it gives an excuse for that cutaway. Like,
it doesn't need the cutaway. If I was the studio exec, I would be doing what I was just railing against like 30 minutes ago and saying,
this
needs to be cut. It doesn't need to be in here.
I mean, if they had just used the scissors that she came out with when he stuck to the porch, then
that's true.
None of this would happen. So it's all.
No. What I'm saying is that this movie is not at the caliber where it's needed to actually show that the dog bred to show a dog later on. And to it be a puppy from that other dog. They could just say that and be like, well, it's a Joe Dirt movie, ha ha ha. And just let it be a funny line.
Remember to spay and neuter your pets is what we're saying.
Remember to spay and neuter your pets, but not with hedge clippers.
Yeah.
There were a few, for me, there were a few, like, vaguely homophobic jokes in here that I just did not, like, every time they came up, I just kept bouncing right off of them. I'm like, this isn't funny, this isn't funny, this isn't, and I knew they were coming, because I remember them, and I just, they just don't hold up better in real life. No. I also really, really, really don't like the Christopher Walken erection joke at all. Like, at that part, I'm just like, stop it. Stop it. It's Christopher Walken. Stop.
What? He can... He can have his fun, too.
No, he can't. Was any part of this movie unexpected? Like, what was your favorite part of the movie? What part was fun that sticks out to you? I have a couple of lines that I think about once in a while from this movie. One of which is, at one point, he gets thrown... And the voiceover goes, luckily, my neck broke my fall. And I think that's very funny and think about that often.
I will always, 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 always find cigarette, slight unspoken cig humor to be funny. One of the moments that I was like, yes, I like that, was when he was doing the alligator bit. And he was holding his cigarette because he was smoking. And the ash was as long as the actual cigarette. Like, the ash wouldn't fall off. And he's just, like, he's holding it. And the ash is just there. And you're waiting for it to fall. And it never does. I personally love that bit. So I'm really happy that it was actually in this movie. Because I've seen that in a few other things.
This is a dumb movie. So I'm going to give you a dumb answer.
Oh, good.
It's the dog being stuck on the porch. Because I have only ever seen this on cable, and I'm pretty sure they don't show that whole scene.
I'm pretty sure
that they just cut away and the dog's stuck and you hear it whimpering. I don't remember that, and it caught me off guard and I laughed hysterically. And I'm not okay about that, like.
Oh. So, Devin, before you go any further, there's something I have to bring up.
What is it?
This movie affected you more than you think.
Oh, no.
And I told Kristen about this because I'm like, there are going to be movies that I'm going to be showing you guys that I'm sure that at some point you're going to bring this back on to me. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if you do, because I understand how this stuff works. But I really think you watch this movie so much as a teenager at a really... delicate age where you took on more from this than you really should have.
Oh no, tell me.
And I'm just gonna write down the I'm just gonna read the note. Oh god, why am I seeing Devin and David Spade's performance, not the character? So there are moments in this movie where David Spade in character is just walking along, taking in the scenery, moving his head, shifting his eyes, you know, being in character, not saying anything, not doing anything that's Joe Dirt, just being Joe Dirt when he's not being Joe Dirt, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You have picked up the slight mannerisms of David Spade being a quiet Joe Dirt. The way you tilt your head, the way you move your eyes, there are so when he's pulling the wagon through the empty like train station and those three teens come up to him, the moment that they show him, go back and watch this scene,
the moment
they show him to right when the first kid says something to him, the way he's moving his head, the way he's moving his eyes, I've seen, you're doing it right now.
I'm so excited to watch this scene now. I've never caught this about me.
Like, I am sure that there are things that I do that I've picked up from movies that I watched a ton from when I was a kid. So I'm so like, it's one of those things like, you shouldn't be ashamed of it. You shouldn't really be embarrassed by it. It was just something that you picked up, because every single one of us, this is a kind of a tie back to when I used to watch Ghost in the Shell a lot. Like, we are all just collections of little pieces of everyone we've ever met.
Yeah.
Because that's how we socialize. As soon as you get is into a new friends group, whether you know it or not, you start to pick up that group's lingo, that group's like body language sometimes. And I think you've watched this movie so much that you've picked up some mannerisms of David Spade being Joe Dirt.
I have
I'm not mad.
I have the scene up right now and I kind of see what he's talking about. Like I can see it. Yeah, because I've definitely seen you do like the gun thing with your arms. Like, you want to go? Come on, let's go. Like, I've seen you do that. Yeah,
I've done that. Yeah.
Like, even to the eye shifty thing. So, like, yeah. I really wanted to get that out because it's one of those things where it's like, I paused it and I was like, sweetie, you got to come out here. And she was like, what? And I was like, you've got to see this. Like, I know that you haven't been around Devin as much as I have, but that's Devin right there. It. Like, that,
yeah.
That 5 seconds, that's Devin.
Oh, man. It makes me wonder, like, what movie I could show you that you would see that for me, Ryan.
Well, we got to find it then. We got to find it.
I have a feeling it's probably something Jim Carrey, if we're talking about comedies.
Oh, I bet it is. We'll have to dig.
I think I have a theory, and it might be my Oscar pick now.
I'm excited.
Because it's a movie that I've been wanting to rewatch, visit. Let's talk about David. Before we wrap this up, there's something I want to talk about with David Spade as a leading man.
I can't.
You can't.
It doesn't work, does it?
No.
No.
My problem is that, and this is something that I wrote down as well. Yeah. I'm not a fan of David Spade by himself. Like, everything that I like about this movie has to do with either other characters or interactions that he has. Joe Dirt by himself doing the narration, you know, the whole thing about the Boeing bomb and the whole frozen turd icicle thing, like that type of stuff. Like, I don't find David Spade funny. It was the same thing in that show that he was in.
Just Shoot Me.
I remember this.
Yeah, that one. Just Shoot Me. Like, it was the same thing in that one too. Like, I didn't like the David Spade skits, but I love him when he's with Chris Farley. And that's what I meant before with that comment. Like, he's better as, like, the other. He's not good when he's the main one.
He's better when he's not by himself. Because the only other movie that... I'm looking at his IMDb. He's known for this, Tommy Boy, The Benchwarmers, and Emperor's New Groove. Like, post-Joe Dirt and Chris Farley's... Post-Chris Farley's death, what he's best known for has been the ensemble stuff where he's getting together with Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider and all of them and doing a grown-ups movie or doing a cameo here and there or television. Like, I think he works better in an ensemble. He's not a leading man. And I don't think it works for me, like, because I too love the Chris Farley stuff that he did. Like, he was such a great straight man for Chris Farley's craziness and physicality and you just have him being there, like, and there would be moments where they would switch where Chris Farley would be the deadpan and then David Spade would be drunk in the front seat of the car while they're while he's driving and have to switch it. But they were such a great duo and I think David Spade is more of an ensemble actor than a leading man.
Yeah, I'm really with you. As much as I love this movie, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, and I'll make this quick because it's already probably an hour. Devin, you mentioned before that there was something that you were happy that I let you know that I looked up.
Ryan, what's a Hemi?
Okay. So make this really quick. Make this really quick. The cylinder and the piston inside the cylinder. Do you know what I'm talking about at all? Those things? Okay. Yes. So when you think of a normal engine, the cylinder has a flat head on it.
Yeah.
It's got a flat roof. And then the piston on the top is like a fist and it's flat, right? That's what you're thinking? Normal, like up and down
that's exactly
motion?
Exactly it, yeah.
A Hemi stands for Hemi... Hemi circular. I can't get that word out right now. So thank you. So what it is, instead of having like at the top of the cylinder, instead of it being flat, it's like someone took a tennis ball and just like molded out the head to be kind of round. So that means that the stuff that's shooting inside of the engine is at a different angle.
Okay.
And then you've got, so then it positions that stuff better to make a more centralized explosion. And then the actual piston itself is molded the opposite of that tennis ball. Mm-hmm. So that it fits into that rounded head design.
Sure.
So because of the extra space and where the explosion is happening, it gives you more power in that setup than if you had that same diameter of piston and cylinder, would to have the flat head instead of like the domed head. That's what that pretty much means. And I'm not a fan of that because there's only one practical use, and that is heavy, big American V8s that a quarter mile. And that's all it is, because you're putting more weight on the piston.
Right.
I like smaller, lighter engines where you can rev things up a lot faster to go more, you know, RPMs. That's why I like the Trans Am with the slanted six that they mentioned instead of the Hemi V8.
Got it. Okay.
I'm more of the, even though, yes, it's slower, I'd rather have the Trans Am. The other thing that I thought was funny, you brought my cousin Vinny to us, right? To have us watch. That was your pick.
That was Alan, I think.
No,
I
had Alan before. Was it me?
Was it you? Did you bring it to watch? Because I've never seen my cousin Vinny before this show.
No, we had Jared from Rum Runners come on.
It was Jared.
Oh, it was Jared. That's right. Jared, thank you for bringing that on the show. I totally thought that was Devin for some reason.
Yeah.
And so I thought there was a connection here. I was like, this is the second movie that Devin's made us watch where they talk about Positrack. Like, is this some subconscious thing that Devin wants to know what Positrack is? And, you know, like, my cousin Vinny, the sister, talks about how, like, oh, this one car, the one wheel will spin, and that's it. And then in this car, both wheels will spin because of Positrack. Yeah. And that. A car that's rear-wheel drive, on the back axle, there's a hub. In the hub, there's a bunch of gears.
Yeah.
And normally, with the way that's designed, when one starts to spin, there's nothing in that hub that prevents that from happening. So it just spins and spins and spins. Positrack, there's like a tiny little metal spring that's in there along with a bunch of other like circular things that attach. I'm not using the actual words because it means nothing to you. So that's So there's a bunch of discs in there that like whenever that starts happening, it causes pressure to build up. And then because of those discs and that little spring that's in all of the gears, it pushes the power over to the other wheel.
Oh, okay. So then they both.
That's all it is. And so that's why during that scene, I'm like, this is the second movie where this has gotten brought up. And I thought that they were both your movies. And that's why both of those overcomplicated, like YouTube videos I sent you of explaining how that worked. That's why I sent those to you, because I thought it was like, he sent this second movie he's had us watch about Positrack.
Really cares about Positrack.
All right. I think that's all we've got on Joe Dirt. Devin, you watched the sequel. Is it just Forrest Gump?
Yeah. So in the sequel, I'll ruin the premise for you. Good, in the sequel, a tornado takes him back to 1965. He lives out his life from 1965 until when he's supposed to meet Brandy, when the dog's balls are stuck on the porch. You get that scene again, but he misses meeting Brandy. And then he has to live out a Back to the Future 2 style life where she meets and marries someone else. And then Patrick Warburton is in it, and he's his guardian angel, by the way. And Patrick Warburton, the angel, takes him back to the original timeline in the end because he learned that he was always rich in family. It wasn't very good, guys.
But I mean, wasn't that the original premise of the first movie?
That he always had a home, and his home wasn't his family. His home was. Yeah.
This reminds me, usually on the show, we try to find things that we can stream online. I could not find this to stream. I had to rent this. Devin, you owe me.
Rent Joe Dirt?
You owe me $4.
Same here.
You owe me $4.
Was it worth the rent? Yes or no?
No. It made me laugh, but okay, I was angry that I had to rent it.
It's like, guys, it's fine. No, it's okay.
I will definitely be sending you a public Venmo request.
You better
be. It's just going to be a plant leaf and a thing of snow, because I want everyone to think that I'm asking you for money.
good.
For something shady. Something.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I think that does it for this week's show. Next week, we've got something fun planned. We're going to be on a special night next week. We're going to be on Tuesday night. We're going to be talking about a film that's dropping on Disney Plus this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be talking about Taylor Swift's The Eras Tour, because if the one thing the internet needs is three guys in their 30s talking about the Taylor Swift Eras Tour movie on Disney Plus. So, yeah.
I'm low-key excited for this, though, actually, because there's something there. There's something there.
There's something there. I'm curious to talk to you guys about this next week. So make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Twitch, like us on Facebook so you can catch our live stream next Tuesday. You can listen. You have to watch this podcast on all major podcasting platforms. You can visit our website at rumwinnerspodcastnetwork.com. And if you're so inclined, you can now support Rum Runners Podcast Network on Patreon. Over on Patreon for $5, you'll get video versions of both Rum Runners Podcast and Dark Rum. You'll be able to see a bunch of stuff that goes on before the show, before they officially start the episode, and after they stop. On top of that, once the network gets to 10 Patreons, you'll be able to hear your name shouted out at the end of the episodes over there. There will probably be more benefits coming up there on that Patreon. Some stuff from us, maybe. So go ahead and support Rum Runners Podcast Network on Patreon. But yeah, that's all I've got for this week, guys. Tune in next week for the Eras Tour, Taylor's version. For You Have to Watch This Podcast, I'm Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
And you get a good look at a T-bone by sticking your head up a bull's ass, but wouldn't you rather take the butcher's word for it? Let's see you next week.